Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Tech Doctor podcast. We have a really special edition, at least it's special to me. I've entitled this particular episode, The Past, Present, and Future of Accessible Technology. And I'm very excited about taking a little journey here for the next 30, 45 minutes, an hour, ever how long it takes. Starting back about 30 years ago when I was beginning to really get interested in microprocessor-based technology and how to make it accessible to people who are blind. And I have a man with me on the Tech Doctor podcast this evening that I met around that time, about 30 years ago, when he was writing software for the Apple II computer. He went on to have some real success with Apple software. He has spent some time leading a group of very talented developers at the American Printing House for the Blind. He's owned his own company during all that time. In recent years, he took on the podcasting hobby himself and set up a website that's known to just about everyone who has an interest in blindness and technology. The website, of course, is Blind Cool Tech, and it's a real pleasure for me to welcome my friend and colleague, Larry Skutkan, to the Tech Doctor podcast, and thanks for being here, Larry.
Well, thank you, Robert. What a great introduction. You make me have chill bumps.
Oh, well.
and you are a friend. Yeah, we've known each other over half our lives.
Yes, we have. Let's start back and talk a little bit about when we first got to know each other, because I'm curious about a few things. I first heard about the Apple II in the late 70s, and I took an AppleSoft basic programming course in about 1979 or 80, but I had no screen reader at that time except for the humans who were in the class with me taking the course. But it seemed like all of a sudden you just appeared on the scene with this very slick, well-written, and soon-to-be-popular piece of software called ProWords, which was a word processor for the Apple II. But how in the world did you find out about it and discover that you could make it talk to you? And just tell us a little bit about how did you do that? Because it seemed like one day the Apple II came out, and the next day ProWords came along, but I'm sure it wasn't quite that fast. But how did you do all that?
I actually got kind of inspired by a book that I borrowed from NLS. It was about synthesized speech. And I got to considering all the possibilities. And not too long after that, I went out and bought a TI-99-4A and would actually use a cassette player for my review. It was just intriguing how you could write software. You know, here was this tool that you could program yourself. So one of the first things I did with it was actually to write a little screen reader for it. I mean, it was a different kind of screen reader because it was basically like a shell that you put around every program you wrote. And just started playing with that and was fascinated. Along comes out the Apple IIe, and I just thought I was in heaven with that TI-99-4A.
Exactly. A whole different piece of heaven came along.
Yeah, it was stepping up to a new plate there. And it was really easy to write software for it. I mean, when you turned it on, you were at a prompt in BASIC. You could start typing line numbers and write software right there. Borrowed a lot of books from RFB&D to learn how to do it and got interested kind of in the assembly language part of it. It was just a fascinating machine. It was really wide open. You know, you could go into what they called the monitor and actually type in assembly code right then and there and have it execute. And, you know, just the way that worked was so cool. And at the time I was in college, I was thinking about going to law school. And I was getting a degree in English, and I thought, you know, what I ought to do is write a word processor so that I could do my papers without, you know, having to type them blindly, so to speak. I know exactly. A lot of people listening to this probably can't even imagine that, but you used to sit down and let her rip and let the cards fall where they may.
You are absolutely right, and that's exactly how I did my papers in high school and college, you know, was just sit down at a typewriter and typed in the information, even though I couldn't read a lick of it, you know, no feedback whatsoever.
And you know, just the fact that you can edit what you've written on a PC was worlds ahead for us, you know.
Oh, it was just a huge thing. But so you got this Apple IIe, and apparently back then, I don't know what you used, but I guess most of us used that Echo 2 speech card,
yeah,
of Street Electronics.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess you heard about that somewhere, or somehow you found out. I'm surprised to hear there were books available from RFB&D and NLS and all that, even back then.
Yeah, no, I was really lucky. Actually, RFB&D did pretty good. You could, still as it is today, you could send them a book if they didn't have it. But yeah, they had a couple of books on AppleSoft programming, and it worked out great. It's nice and easy to do and fun. I really love that word processor, you know, because with software, you can kind of do whatever you want. There's no, well, there's time penalties, but, you know, in carpentry, if you screw up, you've, you know, you wasted a bunch of material. With this, you just waste a bunch of time.
Well, yeah.
But I wrote this, so when you press the down arrow, you know, it would actually move by sentences instead of lines on the screen.
And yeah, I remember that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think one of the things that I will always remember, you were talking about how you could so easily jump into the monitor and write assembly language. And I remember occasionally I would call you on the phone or maybe see you somewhere at a presentation or something. I'd say, Larry, you know, this thing is doing this or that, or it ought to do this or that. And you'd say, wait a minute. And you just jump in there and make it do it, you know, and I will always remember that. And it would just take you a few minutes to put in the code and compile it. And it'd be doing whatever that thing was I thought I wanted it to do or something.
I don't remember that, but I do know I knew that Apple like the back of my hand, you know. It was funny, you know, you could, like I say, I still remember 3D0G.
Uh-huh.
Isn't that weird? And even a couple of the addresses, like where you'd print stuff out after all these years.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It really became a part of your psyche, a part of your heart, you know, a part of your mind. And
it does.
Yeah, and, you know, I guess we were really lucky at that time because there were people like you who were willing to share information, and also the people from Raise.Computing, David Holliday and Karen Navy, they published a newsletter, which I wrote some articles for. And
mm-hmm.
But you know, they were willing to publish the technical information about the super serial card and what the dip switches meant and all that stuff. And that was really helpful to those of us who were trying hard to learn this brand new technology.
Oh, absolutely. They were stellar in that field. And, you know, that was a whole nother portion of the assistive technology that they were taking a great lead in with Braille embossing and the Braille editors, and just did a great job with that.
Yeah, and you know, that is another whole piece of it with things like the Versa Braille. I had one, and, you know, that thing was really a precursor to today's laptop type devices and note-taking devices and all that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And 30 years ago.
Yeah. And they interfaced, the Versa Braille with the Apple II. And that was exciting because you could get Braille output from what you'd written. And that takes that whole idea of getting feedback on what you write up to even a whole new level if you're a Braille user, because you can not only hear it with the speech, but you can read it on the Braille display. And you know, I don't know, I've rarely been as excited in my life as when my Apple IIe first talked to me and when I saw some of that information coming back on the Braille display. What it was like something that I had never imagined would even happen in my lifetime. I'd never even, you know, dreamed of that happening like that.
Isn't that incredible? And you know, to go from nothing to that in just a short amount of time, it's pretty mind-boggling. And look at the advances now. You know, you've got 100 times that Apple computer in your pocket, you know?
Yeah, it is. You're exactly right. It is amazing. But, you know, I give a lot of credit to that whole creative process that you certainly got caught up in, and you were able to put your brain and your talents into developing, you know, something so cool as ProWords. And of course, I have to admit my favorite around that time was ProTerm, because it was a terminal program that you wrote, and it let me go online and get on CompuServe and get on Genie and get on you know, some of the BBSs that were around at that time. And how cool was that? I mean, you know, we had no internet.
Oh, the internet, we couldn't even imagine that.
We couldn't imagine that, but we still, even then, began to develop some communication networks and some ways of exchanging information.
And they were very vibrant communities too, just like they are, you know, those kind of forums are today, except everything, of course, was in its own discrete little space.
Yeah, but I remember how excited I was. I had a 300 baud modem that actually had, it wasn't an acoustic coupler, it was actually a direct connect modem, but it had a switch on it that once you got the service tone, you had to flip the switch to get the modem to actually go ahead and connect.
And you could hear the individual characters coming across.
you could at 300 baud, you know. It was, what a time that was. And boy, when we finally jumped up to 1200 and, you know, 9600, and we got the U.S. robotics modems, man, I thought we were just really doing something back then.
We were.
And what an exciting time that was. But what was that like for you? Did you get a lot of response from people on this software? And was it kind of like having a hit song?
Oh, it really is. Yeah, it really was. It was amazing the response that was out there, because you know, I didn't really know if I was the only one that was interested in this or not. And what was really exciting was even a little later on when I wrote that screen reader for the IBM PC. I mean, that was, you know, that was probably 100 times more people knew about that than with ProWords. But it was great to get you know, ideas and feedback, and, you know, people would say, you know, this, if you could just do this. And, you know, it's funny, I learned early on, I'll never forget, somebody made a suggestion to me, and I thought, now that is really crazy. Why would anybody ever want to do that? But I went ahead and stuck it in there, and, you know, I turned out to be the biggest user of that feature ever. And it really made me think, you know, you need to keep your mind open, even if you even if it isn't immediately obvious. But that, you know, I love that, getting that feedback, and even today, it is like having a hit song out there. And I don't quite understand why, but as far as, you know, to me, it's just something that is interesting and fun to do. And you know, actually, it even gets better all the time. The programming tools have advanced now, too, along with everything else. So it is really an interesting time.
Well, it is an interesting time. And I love the idea of keeping an open mind, because that's really something that we'll talk more about, I'm sure, when we get to talk more about the present. But Apple has really done that for me in recent years, because they keep innovating almost faster than I can keep
up. Isn't that fun?
But, you know, yeah. but to open your mind to the touch screen and all that, we'll talk about that in a minute. But I'm not quite done yet with the early days, because I'm curious about, I guess, about 1984, when they came out with the Macintosh. A lot of blind people around the mid-80s were moving from the Apple II to the IBM PC and clones and MS-DOS, because it just didn't seem like the Apple support was there or something. At least that was my impression. I did it kind of kicking and screaming. I didn't really want to leave my Apple. And in fact, I, in 1988 or so, still wrote my dissertation, for my PhD on the Apple for the most part. You know, tell me a little bit about that time for you. How'd you get from the Apple II where you were so, you knew it so well and you were programming such hot stuff for it? You eventually apparently moved to the PC because that's when you came out with ASAP. So how'd that come about?
Well, it really is a lot. Like you said, it was pretty clear that Apple wasn't behind the 2 series anymore, even though, you know, I think you and I both probably had a 2C and a 2GS. We tried to ride it out as long as we could.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I went over kicking and screaming, too. Very similar to when Windows came out. You know, we all were comfortable the way we were and things worked. That was actually pretty easy to write software for, too. I actually came into it kind of late. People, you know, when I mentioned that I was writing a screen reader, people were like, why? There's already like 6 of them out there.
About what year was that? Do you know?
I think it was 91. And, you know, I wrote the thing in 6 months flat. I mean, I just spent every evening down there banging away on it.
Well, what we're talking about here is a program called the Automatic Screen Access Program, or ASAP, which was an MS-DOS screen reader. But it was unique in that it really was what the name suggests. It was a pretty automatic screen reader. I mean, it would anticipate literally the information that you needed or were going to need on the screen and read that for you. I mean, is that the way you intended it to be, or is that what you were shooting for?
Yeah, I wanted it to... For us to be able to use the PC like a sighted person did. So, you know, at the time, most of the screen readers, you had to go into review and set this and that, and it was a chore to use it. And I wanted to just be able to use the keys like a sighted person did, and it really was a pretty simple idea. It just looked for things that changed on the screen and just spoke out what it thought was the most obvious change. And it you know, it took a little fine tuning to get it right, but it worked out pretty well, actually.
It did, because most of the time what it did speak was the information that you wanted. At least that was my experience with it. And so you wrote that in 6 months, huh?
Well, I mean, the initial version, yeah, you know, as with all software, it just kept on and on over the years. But to get that first version out there, yeah, it was amazingly quick and easy. It's hard to even think about writing a program in 6 months now, although, yeah, I guess you still could.
Well, you know, you say quick and easy, but you were a guy who, I don't know how you are now that, you know, we're old, but back then you were a guy who had just, it seems like, a lot of energy and a lot of passion for what you were doing. And I bet, you know, it seems easy now, but I bet a lot of late nights, a lot of sweat went into that software.
Oh, absolutely. But you know what? It was fun. It was exciting because you could see things happening.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's got to be one of the greatest things about software development, is that you can, at the end of the day, see where you're going or see what you've accomplished. And that's one of the, you know, things that sometimes is missing in a profession like mine of psychology, where you may not ever know really whether you had an impact, because you may not ever see the person again. But software is not quite like that. And sometimes it's so nice, I think, to have that gratification. And, you know, it's...
You're absolutely right. That is a big part of it. It's nice to, you know, it's very much like being a carpenter. You have something at the end that you can show for what you've done. And, And that, and seeing the effect it has on other people, it's, you know, that's really gratifying to say, you know, you hear people say, oh, I love the way this works. And, you know, I mean, now I think I've even got it better over there at APH than when I was writing it all myself, because I've got like 8 guys writing it for me now.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. You really have a talented group of people over
there.
They
are. They're amazing.
And they are amazing. And you know, we'll probably talk some about some of what you all have done over there. But when ASAP came along, my memory of it, you know, what I knew about it was, I don't know how long it took for it to happen, but really in this context, in this community, ASAP became a very popular piece of software. I mean, it was a hit.
It was, yeah, absolutely.
And how long did that, how does that work? How, when you have something like that, you know, how do you live with it, or, you know, do you just work on it all the time? Do you constantly make changes to it, or do you just does it kind of take on a life of its own, or what?
Robert, you hit the nail on the head on all those. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's something that you have a passion for, and you don't mind putting some hours in it. And, you know, as far as the mechanics of the business part of it, you know, I was lucky enough that my wife was able to handle all the orders, and we set up a little office system there. And I continued actually to work at APH for another year or so after that. And so it was pretty funny, you know, I can't remember the numbers now, but we'd just get a crazy amount of orders every day. And I was making way more off of ASAP than I was at APH. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm kind of wasting my time going up there.
Yeah. Wow. And so you were really faced with a decision, you know, about what to do at that point.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And I guess that's when you stepped away from APH for a while and devoted your time full time to MicroTalk.
Yep. Moved out to Texas, actually had a little office downtown there, and hired another programmer and tech support guy and office person, and just had a full-fledged setup going there. And so, you know, Charcy, the other programmer, and I just spent our whole days coding, and Dennis took care of the technical support, and Donna and my kids handled the orders. And if they weren't busy with orders, the girls were in there scanning programming books.
Yeah. I remember those days, and I got to know Dennis well during that time. He was a great guy, an amazing guy.
Mm-hmm, sure is.
And, you know, it was just interesting because, again, this technology keeps taking these twists and turns. But again, about the time, I guess, that ASAP was rolling along really well, Windows really became the thing, and people started leaving MS-DOS.
Mm-hmm. And we were all very scared of that, too. You remember that?
Of course. And, you know, people were saying, well, Windows can never be made accessible, and we're going to be left out. I remember people making lots of statements like that.
Yeah, it's kind of a pattern, isn't it?
Yeah, it seems like it works that way. But you and other people did develop Windows screen readers, and pretty quickly became obvious that, especially, I don't recall too much happening with Windows 3.11 or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. But things really started happening, at least in the access technology area, with Windows 95.
Yeah, I think there might have been one or two screen readers for Windows 3.1, but Windows 95 made things a bit better. There was a lot more consistency, a much much more well-designed system, so it was a little less cluttered to write that kind of software for it. You know, a screen reader is really a pretty invasive piece of software to put on your PC. A lot of code goes through there, you know, every video call. And, you know, every time something gets written to the screen, that screen reader's got its hands in it. So it puts a hurting on the system. And Windows was constructed in such a way that you could do that. Of course, that's what also made viruses possible.
Right, right, exactly, yeah. Made viruses possible. And it's also what makes people who are into the technology who don't know anything about screen readers cringe. At least, you know, the people that I work with in the computer area at the university, they see this screen reader on my machine and they realize how invasive it is, and they really worry that, you know, well, it's going to break their piece of software, or it's going to bog this or that down. And sometimes the screen readers do that, but I think to everyone's credit who develops them, at least, you know, the ones that I use these days, they do a pretty good job of staying out of the way of other people's code.
They do. They absolutely do. You know, you hear, you're right, the IT people cringe at these
Absolutely.
Things because they'll slow down a fast machine. I mean, there's no doubt about it. They're good at what they do, though. And if you ever want to put any software through a test, a screen reader is some real stress for it.
Yes, absolutely. I know that. I've had that experience many times. But we're kind of heading more toward the present here, you know, as we're moving along through this past, present, and future, you know, because around that time things really started coming into play, like email and the web and things that a little more similar to the way that we know things today, even though that was, you know, the mid 90s, that was 15 years ago. That's hard to believe, but
yeah,
you know, it was that long ago. But I remember coming up to Texarkana one weekend when Windows 95 was pretty new, and spending the weekend with you and our friend Clarence Whaley, really learning how to navigate that operating system.
Yeah, that was a real change for us. It was a whole new paradigm, and yeah, we had a great time that weekend.
Yeah, when we really got after it, we stuck with it, and you taught us a lot about it, and you know, we were all kind of very intrigued, I think, by the possibilities and trying to figure out how to really access those possibilities and make them work for us, and that's. I guess one of the things I love most about access technology or making things accessible, you know, I realize that even though your goal with ASAP was to use the computer like a sighted person, and these days we do that to a reasonable extent, I think. But you know, I'm into the Mac these days, and it works well with a screen reader. But when I try to talk to my wife and tell her, and she's a sighted person, how to use the Mac, she uses it very differently than the way that I do. And I think there's no way around that, because we're trying to take a visual machine and make it auditory.
Absolutely. And when you start talking about the touch interfaces, it's even more so, more differently used.
Yeah, it is. And that's one of the interesting things, you know, that's happened in recent years now in the present here, is that for a good 20 years, you know, maybe closer to 25, from about 1984 until just a few years ago, there wasn't a whole lot going on for people who are blind in the Apple arena. I mean, there were a few, I know of at least one screen reader for the Mac, but I never used it and never really got excited about it. And most people were in the Windows environment, but you know, and just a few years ago when Apple switched to Intel and they got serious about accessibility, they really have come back into this arena again after being gone for so long. And I'm a little frustrated that they stayed out of it for so long, but I'm at the same time really glad they're back. And I'm curious to know how you feel about all that.
Well, I love my Mac. You're right. It was frustrating that they were away for so long, but they came back with a vengeance. And actually, I wasn't really too impressed with the voiceovers the first two versions or so, but with the version where they added the Quick Nav in there, it has really become a powerful tool, and it's you know, all such well built hardware. It's just a pleasure to use it. I love my Mac. I actually wouldn't mind writing a screen reader for it, even though there's a free one on it, and you know, that's on my list of projects to take a look at someday. Because I think you could actually make it a little slicker. But
I bet you could, and I wouldn't be surprised if you don't do that someday.
Yeah, it's definite possibility.
You're kind of like me, though. There's always more things that I want to do than I have time to do, and I always hope I'll get to them, and I'll get to as many of them as I can. But you know, there's so much exciting new going on that it's hard to slow down, and I would think, and develop something like that. You must be pulled in a lot of different directions.
Oh, I am. Time is my most precious friend. You're right. You know, in a lot of ways, you can make things work for you, too, you know. And like I know with the when I wrote ASAP, I was just moving over to the IBM. So it was a way to learn the system while you were creating something. And, you know, you can really learn a lot about a machine when you're programming it. And, you know, I would like to have the time to get in and learn the innards of this OS X system. It's a very powerful one, and you know, I've dipped into it a little bit, and I really like what I see. And you know, as you well know, it just works.
Larry, what do you think about this idea, which really is kind of a paradigm shift, kind of controversial in some ways, that Apple seems to me has really pushed forward, where they as a major manufacturer, major company that they are, where they have just started including their screen reader in their products at no additional charge, which is a different paradigm than what we're used to. I'd just be curious to know, what are your thoughts about that? Is it a good idea, not a good idea? What do you think?
Well, I've heard a lot of the arguments on how it could be a good idea or it couldn't. But my personal opinion is I think it's a great idea. I think that Apple is setting the bar for other companies to, you know, show them that putting accessibility in there is not impossible, even with a seemingly impossible task like a touchscreen. And, you know, there's really, hopefully in a few years, I know we've been saying this for 30 years, Robert, that there should be no excuse for something not to be accessible.
Yeah.
You know, especially now that the population is, we have so many older Americans that are losing their sight. Accessibility, I think, is really something that companies need to consider.
Yeah, I really agree with that, and I think Apple has not only, you know, they didn't talk the talk, they walked the walk. They showed us that it could be done, and of course they have huge resources and more money than they know what to do with, and fabulous engineers, I'm sure, and people who are probably some of the best creative minds in the world, you know, that they have at their disposal to work on accessibility if that's how they choose to spend some of their time. But yeah, to have it built in from the ground up is really what a lot of us, myself included, has advocated for or has dreamed of, you know. And that's not to take anything away from things like what you developed and other screen reader manufacturers over the years have developed. Those things were critical. We had to have them because there was no other choice. But this does change the landscape a little bit.
It does, and you know, I'm like you. I think these companies, Freedom Scientific and GW, are doing a great job, but let's face it, $1,000 is a lot of money to pay for just being able to use your computer. And I think one of the things it's done is it's going to bring the price down. And a lot of people say, well, it's going to take away all the competition. And it has for the moment. But I can see a screen reader being developed for the Apple and selling for $50 or $100. I mean, I would pay for it if it was better and made me more productive.
Especially if it was $50 or $100.
Yeah.
And I think that is maybe one of the major things that I see going on right now, is that people are starting to make more noise about, wait a minute, you know, if Apple can build this in, I don't want to pay $1,000 for this screen reader for my for my Windows machine. And I think there's just been a level of consciousness that has been tapped into, and it's going to be very interesting to see where that leads us, I think, in the next few years.
Well, and you know, one of the arguments people have against doing it this way too is, you know, there's the argument of, well, how are you going to get technical support and bugs fixed when you have to go through such a big company? But they have been amazingly responsive. I mean, that they actually surprise us with the features they come out with. Well, you know, look, they just added Bluetooth, Braille, and keyboard support to the iPhone here back in, what, June, I think it was?
Yeah, yeah. And I actually borrowed one of your APH refresher Brailles.
Isn't that a sweet little display?
Yeah, for an evening, and I immediately was able to connect it to my iPhone, you know. And,
yeah.
What a cool thing that was. And it wasn't difficult to do. And I didn't even have to pull out my usual level of geekdom nerdiness to make it happen, you know. So
no manuals or anything.
No, I didn't have a manual or anything, but it did. It just worked. And so, you know, let's just talk a minute about the whole touchscreen beyond the Macs. You know, when last summer when the iPhone 3GS was announced, and it was announced that it had VoiceOver built into it, I was actually in Europe at the time, and I heard a podcast talking about this, and my son and I were listening to this podcast. We were on a plane, and he looked down and realized we were both sitting there doing these gestures we were hearing about on our pants leg. and so my wife gave us a really hard time about that for quite a while, about how nerdy we really are. But, you know, just the idea that we were going to be able to do gestures on these screens and have VoiceOver respond was really an incredible thing to me.
Oh, it changed the landscape. I mean, nobody would have predicted that we'd be using touchscreen phones 2 years ago.
Yeah, I remember telling my father at one point, you know, he was asking me, did I have an iPhone? And I said, no, and I probably never will because it'll never be accessible.
Those were some good words to eat, weren't they?
They were some yummy words to eat. Yes, yes, indeed they were. And but what do you have much experience with the touchscreen interface? And do you have many thoughts about it, or do you like it, not like it?
Well, I love the ability to get spatial relationships on the touchscreen. And I just saw a program the other day that I think is going to change the landscape again. And it's a little program that runs on Android phones called Intersection Explorer.
I heard about that.
And it's a map. And you touch the middle of the screen, and then you circle around, and you get a vibration wherever there's a road leading away from where you first touched.
Mm-hmm.
And it really gives you an awareness of spatial relationships and the angles of roads, the way they run. Very exciting little, you know, it's a little rough right now. Got a few bugs in it, but the concept is great. And
but don't you think that, you know, really something like that could be very useful in terms of planning your route before you go out? And you would have a pretty good idea of what those turns were going to be like.
I've been loving just learning about some of the streets that I've never walked around here in my own neighborhood and seeing where they go and what they run into. It really is an effective interface. And, you know, when you can take the touch screen and I'm going to talk a little bit about the future. I know we're not ready for that yet.
No, we can jump into the future.
You know, you combine that spatial relationship abilities with some feedback, and right now we've got vibration for haptic feedback, but, you know, a lot of the, there's a lot of work going on right now, believe it or not, and, well, you probably do, Robert, with some electroactive polymers and other technologies where in a few years we'll actually be able to feel items on the screen, buttons. You know, I think the easiest thing to think of is a telephone dialing pad would morph itself on your touch screen.
And you'd feel those buttons.
Yeah, and they would actually go in when you pushed them. It would be a complete haptic feedback. So when you combine, you know, those two technologies, even though the touch screen the electroactive polymers aren't quite ready for prime time yet, but I think in the next few years we'll be seeing that kind of progress. And, you know, you can think, wow, if you could feel everything, you know, a keyboard could pop up on your iPhone or a map, graphics, even animated graphics. It's really interesting to think of the possibilities.
It is fascinating. That is very interesting to me, and I can't wait to see how that evolves and develops. And you mentioned the Android operating system, Android phones, and I think that just in the last couple months, I'm really starting to hear some exciting accessibility possibilities for Android. And, you know, I'm a big iPhone fan, and I'll admit that, but I'm awfully excited to see this other platform being developed like this.
Oh, it can be nothing but good for us as consumers. that good old American competition.
Absolutely. It seems to drive everything. Do you have other comments that come to the top of your head about the future? I mean, is there anything that you really, if we sort of project out 5-10 years, anything that you really anticipate other than what you've mentioned, anything you really look forward to?
Well, absolutely. I love thinking about the future because it's interesting to see little pieces of it coming. Well, like we were talking about with the iPod, if you'll remember, the Nano came out with a version of VoiceOver on it a year or so, I think, before the iPhone did. And, I mean, it was a crude version, but you could see, well, hey, they're putting some consideration into this. But, yeah, as far as I think a couple of things. On the software front, we need to watch the Web 2.0, things like Google Docs and Google Spreadsheets and some of these applications. It's kind of funny. We've come full circle. You know, back in the 50s, everything, we just had little terminals and everything was run on these central processors out there somewhere. And then in the 60s and 70s and 80s, we all desktops. We thought that was the greatest thing, where everybody can have their own computing power. Well, now we're going back to this distributed computing power again, and with a lot more interesting twist to it now, too. And it's so amazing how quickly this software evolves. You know, like I say, I've been playing with this Android a little bit, and it's just amazing just to try to keep up with it. Yeah. And, you know, there's so many people working on it. So, you know, this whole idea of the web-based applications, that I think is a wave of the future. And, you know, we've been reading that for 20 years, but it's here now. You know, they're not exactly, a lot of them aren't the best accessibility, but, and there's another fun place where somebody could do some real significant accessibility work. But another trend, I think, for the future is just what we were talking about. I really don't think that we're going to be having desktop PCs around for another, you know, in another decade or so. I imagine you'll take your phone out of your pocket, and if you need a physical keyboard, there'll be one wirelessly available for you at your desk, at your workstation or whatever. But yeah, it's all going mobile. And isn't it a great thing to have all those sensors in there? You know, you got your camera and your GPS and tilt and compass, accelerometers, all in one device. You know, that's a lot you can do with it. And I think that's just going to increase faster and more furious. You know, there's already a lot of new tablets, all inspired by the iPad, coming out this fall, that are running various versions of Android and some Windows and stuff. So those are some pretty exciting things to think about too.
Yeah, you're right. There are very exciting things coming along, and I think the mobile space really is where it's all going. Even yesterday, Apple had their press conference about their new version of operating system, which they're going to call Lion. And really what they've done is taken the best of the mobile space, the iOS interface, and integrating it into the Mac. And they called it Back to the Mac. You know, they're bringing it back around.
Yeah.
And I think that's just an example of that's where we're heading. And I don't know about you, but I mean, I haven't used a desktop machine at home for quite a few years, except for very little. We do have an iMac here, but I don't use it. All I do is back it up and keep the software updated on it.
You know what else is interesting, Robert? If you think about it, we don't use our PCs without the internet anymore either. The days are gone when you just turn on a PC and you're isolated. You know, if you're not connected now, you're not really using it.
It's really boring.
Yeah.
If you're not connected, it's really boring. And so that's why we all want this connectivity everywhere we are, because what I think you're saying is we are, whether we like it or not, we are moving to the cloud. I mean, that's where our stuff's going to live.
Yep, absolutely.
And that's, I mean, that just makes all kinds of sense. It's just the way it's going to be. We're not going to need these hugely powerful PCs. I mean, look at how much we've been able to do on these little devices, like the iPhones and Android phones, and even, you know, things like some of the things that you all have done at APH, the Braille Plus, things like that. You know, look how much power you get out of all that because of the fact that you can connect it to the internet.
Right. And you know, the hardware is moving so quickly too, that, you know, that I've got a computer sitting over here on my desk that I used to use. My phone is twice as fast as that computer.
Yeah, it is amazing. And you know, fits like you said, in your pocket. How exciting is that? I mean, I think that we have really so much to look forward to. And, you know, Larry, it's so cool because we've had so much already, and just the realization that there's so much more to come. What an exciting thing that is.
It really is. It kind of makes you excited to see if you can live long enough to really embrace all these changes. And none of us will. But
no, but I hope we live long enough to embrace quite a few more of them.
No, definitely.
That's what I'm hoping for. Well, I think this has been a really neat discussion, and I appreciate you taking some time out just to kind of reminisce with me and think about where we've been and where we are and where we're going. It's just kind of cool to take a little time to do that sometimes.
That was fun, Robert. Thank you for inviting me onto your show.
Well, I will draw this to a close for now and say again, thank you to you, Larry, and anyone who would like to comment on what we've talked about here, feel free to email the Tech Doctor at techdoctor123@gmail.com. That's TECHDOCTOR, the numbers 123@gmail.com. And with that, we'll say so long for this time. And thanks again, Larry. It's been really fun.
Thank you, Robert.